How to fight the new fascism. The rise of the far right is something that must concern any civilized society. Even before the horrific terrorist atrocity in Christchurch, there have been signs that racist extremists are becoming more active. In the UK, 4 of the 18 terror attacks prevented by the intelligence agency since March 2017 have come from the far right. Although, thankfully, the far right is still a fringe phenomenon, it is futile to deny that such groups are steadily growing in influence. How sad, then, that the debate about how best to stymie this disturbing trend has been reduced to facile and baseless finger-pointing. Often seen as a sideshow to the serious business of governance. To borrow Stephen Heuser's phrase, what has become known as the culture war has been brought into sharp focus through the reinstatement of tribal fault lines in politics. This week we have seen David Lammy doubling down on his ludicrous comparison of the European Research Group with the Nazi Party, and Chris Key in The Independent calling for UKIP and the newly formed Brexit Party to be banned from television debates. It is clear that neither Key nor Lammy have a secure understanding of what far-right actually means and, quite apart from the distasteful nature of such political opportunism, their strategy only serves to generate the kind of resentment upon which the far-right depends. The blame game after Christchurch was a similarly scattershot affair. Australian Senator Fraser Anning blamed Muslim immigration. American video game developer Brianna Wu implicated Tucker Carlson. A student at a vigil in New York City harangued Chelsea Clinton, saying the attack had been stoked by people like you. A chain of bookstores in New Zealand stopped selling Jordan Peterson's book 12 Rules for Life on the supposition that it had inspired the killer, which would suggest that they are not remotely familiar with its contents. Although obviously an emotional time, there can be no excuse for such divisive knee-jerk responses. Soon after the attack, the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, called for a concerted global fight against racism. The sentiment is obviously laudable, but her government has begun by enacting heavy-handed internet censorship which extends even to discussion of the shooting. This is a boon to the far right, who will doubtless play on the legitimate grievances of citizens who feel that their freedoms are being curtailed. The far right, no supporters of free speech, are able to point to the increasingly censorial tactics of politicians in order to pose as martyrs. Those who seek to narrow the Overton window of acceptable thought, to restrict free speech as a means to prevent the normalization and legitimization of certain forms of discourse, are doing more harm than good. But the cultish nature of the social justice movement, with its combination of utter self-certainty, a reluctance to debate, and a belief among its most vocal proponents that they represent the underdogs, means that it will be difficult to stem the momentum. Perhaps the most damaging aspect of present-day social justice activism is its weaponized form of identity politics, a feature it has in common with the far right. On both sides we have seen the promotion of a them versus us mentality, one favored throughout history by those who wish to reduce complex situations to a readily digestible slogan. Moreover, identitarians on both the left and the right see human beings only through the prism of race, gender or sexuality, and fail to account for the primacy of the individual. As such, they are in direct opposition to the principles of Martin Luther King, who valued the content of one's character over the color of one's skin. While collectivist rhetoric from the racist far right is easy enough to dismiss, it is far more difficult when it comes from those who claim to be advancing a progressive agenda. Well-intentioned authoritarianism might be a semantic contradiction, but it has nonetheless emerged as a powerful and ominous force. After events such as Christchurch, it is important to reflect on the circumstances that have somehow produced a human being so lacking in empathy that he would commit such an unfathomable act of violence, but in doing so we must exercise caution. The instinct to apportion blame to anyone other than the perpetrator is understandable, but it only really serves to mitigate his own responsibility. All of us are open to persuasion and influence, and the effects of propaganda are well documented. But we also have individual autonomy and should be held accountable for our choices. The leap of faith it takes to blame the right-wing commentariat for the murder of Joe Cox, for instance, is as myopic and distasteful as those who seek to demonize all Muslims for the behavior of a violent minority.